studios here at the Capitol Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
We are extensively covering what has occurred in the past hours. Practically, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC, to have launched extensive retaliatory missile and drone strikes against the occupied territories, many of which have landed through drones and missiles. The IRGC announced launching the strikes in a statement defining the mission as what it has called Operation True Promise. In the studio, we have Gisa Misha Ahmedi with us to give us more details about what has occurred. Well, Gisa, at this point, I'm sure the whole world is aware of what has occurred, but tell us the latest that you have on this.
The latest, we are still waiting for more details to, of course, bring you more details about this retaliatory attack. But I can tell you that last night was a very special night for Iranians. Crowds, huge crowds gathered in the streets in the capital, Tehran, in front of Tehran University. A huge crowd of students gathered, and then people started coming and joining them in their celebration. And then they walked down the street to arrive in front of the British Embassy, where they stayed there for about an hour and a half celebrating. There were fireworks, kaved, there were people chanting slogans, cheering, but those who were in the car honking the horn, the motorcyclists, and they were carrying flags of Palestinian flag, the flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And basically, it was a very special night for Iranians. Let's not forget that Iran has been very patient with the Israeli regime, and at this point, you can say that Iranians had run out of patience. They were really waiting for the IRGC to have some kind of retaliatory action. And when the news broke out that Iran has attacked some Israeli targets in the occupied territories, you could see how happy they were and cheering the IRGC. You do know that for many years Israel has been targeting nuclear scientists, military officials, but this time they stepped over the red line, and this time it really couldn't remain unanswered. And that was the mood last night. Like I said, people were very happy in showing their joy and supporting the IRGC, and also sending a message to their Muslim brothers and sisters in Gaza, who last night, after more than 7 months, it was the first night that there were no attacks on the Gaza Strip.
The news of more drones to be on the way has been published now. It hasn't been officially acknowledged, but it's still out there, and it seems like that is somewhat being now recognized for it to be true. Do you have any information on that? Supposedly 80 more drones to reach their occupied Palestine within an hour or so.
I'm just checking the news right now to bring you the latest. I also have the unconfirmed reports that more than 80 drones are also on the way. It is a huge attack, and let's not forget that the Israelis, although they were prepared for an attack, according to Israeli media, they were not prepared for an attack of this scale. And while more drones on the way only means one thing for the Israelis, and the fact that that facade of being invincible and being strong, well, that is definitely gone. And another thing that is for sure is that the Iron Dome that they were so proud of has proven to be completely ineffective. We've had some pictures going viral online of these drones hitting their targets, and you do know that Iran has acquired a significant amount of technology regarding producing drones, and most of them are stealth drones, so it won't be that easy to intercept them.
All right, thank you very much. That's Gisa Misha Ahmedi here in the studio with us, giving us the latest. We are going to get an analysis on this Let's bring in Shabir Rizvi, political commentator from Chicago, who joins us. Shabir Rizvi, welcome. So here we have it. Finally, you know, you are looking at the courage that not only Iran, its officials, the IRGC, but also the Iranian nation has showed, not only in terms of the patience throughout the years and decades, and here we have this retaliatory attack to take place against the Israeli regime, of which we have seen the rockets, the drones, and the missiles to have landed on occupied Palestine. Perhaps like no other time, we are seeing how Israel is broken in how it cannot even defend itself when it comes to this type of attack, again, with Iran being the country to have had the courage to do this. Tell us how that changes the equation, first of all, of the region when it comes to Israel being one of the menaces of the region when it comes to its, bad behavior, to say the least.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me. Let me first start off by extending my congratulations to the IRGC and the entire Iranian nation for this extremely successful night that has finally put down any rumors that may have been circulating prior to that, you know, the IRGC will refuse to strike or their power. We've seen this put to rest, and we've also seen for our very eyes, and even with perhaps even more swarms of drones, that the Israeli regime has been put on check. I mean, the you saw it for yourself. There's footage circulating everywhere, whether it's drones or rockets or missiles. The Iron Dome is a facade. It's fake. It's worth nothing. It's been crushed. The high-tech Israeli military sites have been targeted and have been disposed of. Not only that, but we see how just fragile the Zionist regime is. While Iran is raining down rockets on the Zionist regime, Yemen is also able to strike Israel. Hezbollah is able to strike Israel. Iraq is able to strike Israel. This illegitimate state is being put on notice. And something else that's also being put on notice is the social ramifications of aligning yourself to the Zionist entity. And what I mean by that is my head is turning to the treacherous regime of Jordan, where the king of Jordan attempted to stop Iranian rockets from hitting their intended targets. Meanwhile, the people of Jordan flat out reject this move. They went to the streets, they protested their leadership, and they cheered on the Iranian rockets. So you see not only the popularity of resistance, but you also see how unpopular it is to go against the resistance, where the very authority of people that are aligning themselves to the Zionist regime, their authority is being put into question. It's being put into check. The king of Jordan is being put into check. How dare you stop this proper retaliation, this just retaliation, where Israel has crossed a serious red line, and this retaliation is completely justified under the UN Charter. If this had happened to any other Western regime, they would have responded disproportionately. All hell would have broken loose, but the exact response that was given by Iran was proportionate, it was just, and I might add, it's completely, again, within the legal boundaries of the law. This is something that Israel or any Western regime time and time defiles.
Let me bring in now Jamal Khanj, who's an author and political commentator from San Diego. Jamal Khanj, welcome. Taking a look at now the U.S. reaction that we're seeing here, like the U.S. Defense Secretary, we do not see conflict with Iran, and also Joe Biden telling Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that U.S. will oppose any Israeli counterattacks against Iran. How is it that the U.S. can come out, make statements like that, when about 7 days or 10 days ago, we've had that terrorist attack that happened by the Israeli regime on Iran's consulate in Damascus in Syria, where the American fighter jet with American bombs struck that building against Vienna conventions, breaking international rules and laws, while both have done so on many occasions. Iran is acting within its rights because it was struck. How do you that point obviously is not going to be echoed in the news or covered as much, Western media in particular. But can you put that into context for us in terms of how now Iran has reacted?
Well, you know, I mean, first, I wasn't surprised, to be honest with you, with the response that we received from Biden. This has been the case forever between when it comes to Israel. There are, you know, double standards in the U.S., and Israel, basically, I would say, the queen of applying double standards. when it comes to the U.S. government. I mean, when Israel attacked the Iranian diplomatic office of mission, consulate in Damascus, basically it was silence. I mean, they did not even say anything about it, even though it violated every law. Even during World War II, you know, wherever there were diplomatic missions in countries, it were never even attacked, were never targeted. So this is unprecedented, basically, the attack against the Iranian embassy in Damascus. And everybody was expecting a retaliation from Iran. I mean, this is within the right of any government to protect its own citizens, its own missions, its own country, in a way, because it is really an Iranian land in Syria. I mean, it has complete sovereignty over that property in Syria, according to, again, to the international law and the relationships between countries. And so I'm not surprised. I wouldn't have expected anything else from Biden, to be honest with you. We have two political parties in the U.S., as you know, the Republicans and the Democrats. And both leaders are groveling, basically, to Israel, trying to who is going to be basically more servile than the other when it comes to serving Israel and its interest in Palestine. Following up to the previous interview that you had, I'm really disappointed. I'm saddened by the fact that an Arab space, and here I'm speaking as a Palestinian, as an Arab also, to see an Arab space like Jordan space to be used to protect the state of Israel from missiles fired from Iran and the drones from Iran. I mean, this is within the right of Iran to do what they needed to do, to retaliate for an attack. This is not something happened out of the blue. It was expected. As you said, it took even longer than it should have been, maybe 2 weeks, allowed possibly even Israel to prepare for it more than it should. But it is within their right to be able to do it even as soon as they could. And they should, and they had done it. And they, I mean, I would, you know, add to it, congratulate the forces that targeted Israel today. And I hope it is really not the end of that relationship, because this entity, Israel, does not understand civility. They only understand power. And unless you really treat them with deterrence, they are not going to sit and go, you know, basically behave in a civil way, which I never believe they would be able even to behave in a civil way. I mean, Hezbollah in Lebanon and now the resistance in Gaza, they proved to be a deterrence for Israel. And that's why Israel counts to 10 before they would attack, say, beyond the southern region in Lebanon, because they know there is a deterrence force there. The same thing, that's why they want to be able to wipe out, as at least Netanyahu keeps saying, to wipe out the resistance in Gaza, because they are afraid of that deterrence. Sadly, again, the Arab countries around Palestine, they acted as a buffer zone. And I just don't know how people are still able to tolerate those kind of regimes.
Great. Let's listen now to the Iranian ambassador to the UN, Amir Said Iravani, who has addressed the UN Secretary General and the President of the U.S. Security Council in terms of the defense of Iran's retaliatory strikes against Israel. Let's take a listen to what he has said.
This action was in the exercise of Iran's inherent right to self-defense as outlined in the Article 51 of the Charter of the United Nations, and in response to the Israeli recurring military aggressions, particularly its armed attacks on 1st April 2024 against Iranian diplomatic premises in the defiance of Article 2, Section 4 of the Charter of the United Nations. Regrettably, the United Nations Security Council has failed in its duty to maintain international peace and security, allowing the Israeli regime to transgress red lines and violate the fundamental principles of the international law. Such violations have exacerbated tensions in the region and threatened regional and international peace and security. As a responsible member of the United Nations, the Islamic Republic of Iran is committed to the purposes and principles enshrined in the Charter of the United Nations and international law, and reiterates its consistent position that it does not seek escalation or conflict in the region. The Islamic Republic of Iran will not hesitate to exercise its inherent right of self-defense when required. Should the Israeli regime commit any military aggression again, Iran's response would be stronger and more resolute.
Right now is a good time to actually listen to what the Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Mohammad Baghdadi, has said regarding Operation True Promise, of which he said Iran achieved all of its objectives. Let's take a listen to what he said.
The Operation True Promise, with the codename of Ya Rasulallah, was conducted overnight with success and achieved all of its objectives. The strikes were designed to target a massive intelligence center in Jabal al-Shaykh on the border with Syria. The center relayed information that was used to attack the consular section of the Iranian embassy in the Syrian capital of Damascus. Among the targets was also Israel's Nevatim Air Base, from which the regime used its F-35 fighters in the crime committed against Iran's embassy. Both these targets sustained considerable damage and were destroyed. The operation saw the use of drones, ballistic and cruise missiles that penetrated the Israeli air defense shields, and the regime failed to counter these attacks in a meaningful way. The operation has now been concluded and will not continue, as all of its objectives are met. If the Israeli regime carries out any acts of aggression against the Islamic Republic or its centers inside or outside Iran, our next operation will be conducted on a much larger scale.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, April 14th, 2024. I'm Atefe Irfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, as I always say, Listeners Special is your program, and it's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from you, dear listeners. This time, Hemant Kumar from India has sent us reception report. Again from India, we have reception report from Bashir Ahmed, and from Mohammad Khaku from the United States, we have reception report. So, Hemant, Bashir, and Mohammad, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Thank you for the reception reports. And here we've received emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read your emails. Bashir Ahmed from India has sent us a piece of email. Lou Dacheng, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. And from Russia, we've received an email from Anatoly Klipov. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. And old places may be beautiful for their design, but sometimes they're beautiful because of their very age, because of the mark that time has left upon them. Save Jame Mosque is one of the historical, religious, and beautiful buildings where you can see traces of three historical periods before Islam, the first centuries of the advent of Islam in Iran and the Safavid era. Isn't that interesting? Three historical periods. It's very interesting. So, before I explain more about the Save Jame Mosque in Iran, I will read one of your emails from Bashir Ahmed from India. Bashir Ahmed from India is one of our old and regular listeners who says, "Dear staff at IRIB English Radio, hereby I would like to send you my warm greetings as always. The holy month of Ramadan is over and I would like to say happy Eid to your staff and all listeners who celebrate this blessed feast." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, to Bashir Ahmed from India, and thank you very much for writing to us. Thank you for your congratulation message on Eid al-Fitr. Actually, happy Eid al-Fitr to all Muslim listeners and to all Muslim people around the world. Bashir Ahmed from India, thank you very much for writing to us. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We wish you luck. This is Listeners Special, and I was saying, Save Jame Mosque is located in the city of Save in Markazi province, central Iran. This historical mosque is made of adobe and mud. The building of Save Jame Mosque consists of a courtyard and a dome in its southern part, two ivans, a minaret, several prayer halls or shabistans, and old mihrabs decorated and built with Kufic and Sol's scripts. The beautiful Iranian architecture, along with the handmade art of turquoise tiling of the dome, has doubled the beauty of the Save Mosque. Save Jame Mosque was registered in the National Heritage List close to 80 years ago. The mosque underwent renovation and reconstruction during various historical periods. Yes, this is the story of Save Jame Mosque. And here, let's see what Lu Dacheng from China says. Lu Dacheng is one of our old and regular listeners. Dear friends of English section of IRIB, actually IRIB English Radio. Hello, I am Lu Dacheng from China. I am your loyal listener. I always listen to your programs on shortwave. I know, Islamic Republic of Iran is an Islamic country. So, I would like to say Eid Mubarak. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran. Lu Dacheng from China, thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio. And thank you very much for your congratulation message on Eid al-Fitr. Eid Mubarak, thank you. In our language, in Farsi language, however, in Arabic, they also say Eid Mubarak, meaning happy Eid, happy this occasion, Eid al-Fitr. Eid Mubarak and happy Eid al-Fitr to all Muslims around the world, especially IRIB English Radio listeners. Lu Dacheng from China, thank you very much for writing to us. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. An electronic QSL will be sent to you as confirmation to your email. Welcome back. Let me add something about the Saveh Jameh Mosque. Experts believe the beautiful prayer halls and corridors of the mosque with their brick facades were built during the Seljuk era. It's more like a museum. Archaeological samples dating back to the pre-Islamic, early Islamic and Safavid eras have been unearthed by archaeologists conducting research on the mosque. The main mihrab of the mosque has vertical and horizontal inscriptions on its three walls. They are engraved with Kufi and Sulfi scripts and Quranic verses. Very beautiful. You can't believe it. God bless the archaeologists of this mosque. Jameh Mosque of Saveh is a valuable legacy in religion, architecture, painting, tiling, and ornamentation, such as plasterwork and Kufic scripts. So, I prefer to talk less so that you may travel to Iran, to Saveh in Markezi province and in central Iran, and visit this mosque. This historical mosque attracts tourists and pilgrims from different Islamic countries and from around the world. So just pack your suitcase and take a visit to this historical mosque, and don't forget to take a camera with yourself because it's very beautiful and you shouldn't miss the beauties of this mosque. Yes, life is short, so don't miss its countless beauties. And as I said in the introduction part of our program, Anatoly Klepov from Russia has sent us a piece of email. Let's see what Anatoly from Russia says. Dear friends, greetings from Russia. I am your regular listener. My hobby is listening to radio from different stations around the world. This email contains a report on the reception of your radio station, which will give a full assessment of audibility in Moscow. Hope my report helps. Technical service of your radio station. Please confirm this reception. I would be glad to receive information about your station. Thank you. Salam and greetings from Tehran, from Iran, and from IRIB English Radio to you, Anatoly Klepov from Russia. We are grateful to you for this email. An electronic QSL will be sent to you as confirmation to this email. And as you said, of course, your reports will help us promote the quality of our programs. Thank you for that. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And you should know that the information about our station, IRIB English Radio, is available at our website at parstoday.ir/en. And there you can find the information about our radio, IRIB English Radio. Thank you again, Anatoly Klepov from Russia. And here we've come to the end of our today's edition of Listeners Special. In this edition, we read your emails and your reception reports, and we talked about Saveh Jameh Mosque in central Iran. We had a very good time being together. But before saying goodbye to you, I just wanted to send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us emails, letters, and reception reports from around the world, including Muhammad Khaku from the U.S., Bashir Ahmad from India, Hemant Kumar from India, and Luda Cheng from China, also Anatoly Klepo from Russia. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us at IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special Program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Day 190 of the U.S.-Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, and the devastation has taken a turn for the worse. This is in reference to the city of Khan Yunis. As an example, near total destruction. Reason? Massive arms and bombs provided by countries like the U.S. and the U.K., who have said it cannot stop arms sales to the Israeli regime. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at the depth of the genocidal war in all of its aspects, the worldwide pro-Palestine solidarity protest, and why hopes were dashed again for Palestinians' quest for statehood, even though there are many countries eager to support Palestinian statehood. First, let me introduce our guests. Nick Knapp here joins us from the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign in Edinburgh. Also joining us is Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria, who joins us from Manchester. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Nick Knapp here, if I may start with you, and let's look at the UK arms sales and what the UK has said, that it's not going to suspend its arms exports to Israel. Now, what's interesting is what David Cameron has said, that he reviewed the most recent legal advice about the situation on the ground, but this left the UK's position on export licenses unchanged. Now, if there's legal advice that the situation on the ground was reviewed, doesn't that mean that they also reviewed the fact that over 33,000 Palestinians have been killed, which equals to a genocide, and then they made a decision to make that announcement?
The British government are just making excuses. The truth is that they want to continue to help Israel with its bombing because they share 100% the Israeli objective of crushing the Palestine resistance. The government are, however, under some pressure because of the legal situation. It would be against British law to supply arms to a country that was committing genocide. And therefore, the government are reluctant to reveal the legal advice that they are receiving, because a child can see that a genocide is going on, and therefore the British government are just trying to hide the truth.
Well, let's break this down a little bit further, McNapier. Sorry about the mix-up there. In terms of this statement by David Cameron, I mean, he says that based on legal advice, the UK is acting within international law. Now, trying to wrap our head around that, when you have the ICJ, the UN, like the UN Special Rapporteur for the Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, and a host of other organizations that I'm sure you're more familiar with, have said that what is taking place is a genocide, then how can the UK... I don't know if I should ask you how the UK could be acting within international law, or how could David Cameron have the courage to come out and say that?
I think the word is not courage, it's shamelessness. I mean, the British government, this is not the first time they've backed a genocidal regime. Margaret Thatcher famously appeared on television at a time when Britain and America were backing the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia against the Vietnamese installed government, to say that there was a faction of the Khmer Rouge, the moderates, with whom Britain could work. So if you can work with the Khmer Rouge, you can work with Netanyahu to try to exterminate tens and tens of thousands of Palestinians. No, this is the infinitely elastic British government concept of international law, where international law extends to the obvious violation of international law. Look, the Genocide Convention is unlike any other. It absolutely enjoins and demands that all the affiliated governments, all the governments that endorse the convention, must take every available means within their power to stop a genocide starting or to bring it to an end as quickly as possible. But we see, for example, the main government, could I say, in Yemen, taking practical action in support of Palestine, in support of Gaza, trying to interdict Israeli supply lines to come to the aid of the people in Gaza under genocide. But Britain and America bomb them. So it's not just that they are turning a blind eye to international law. They're violating any conceivable concept of international law. Because once again, the ICJ has said there is a plausible case for genocide against Israel. That means it's likely or probable or very, very much on the cards. Once that's in the frame, then it's quite clear the British government and the Americans are utterly opposed to any vestige of international law. And you know, one of the Christian spokesmen in Jerusalem made the point recently. Whenever Britain and America ever raise their voices to talk about human rights, you don't need a detailed lawyer to respond. You just have to say Gaza. And that means that everything they say should not be taken, nothing they say should be taken seriously in that area from now on. So I think that the fact that Cameron is continuing to send the weapons really means they're paying a very high price in terms of isolation. In terms of big millions and millions of people around the world deciding never to believe another word the British government says. Now, we know about perfidious Albion. I don't want to cast any aspersions on your other guest, an ex-ambassador, but we know that Britain is a byword for dishonesty in the field of diplomacy. But now to say that this is despite hundreds of lawyers, including High Court judges, who've just written a letter recently saying that Britain is very likely in breach of international law. Cameron digs in, but nobody believes him. I don't even think he believes himself.
Well, taking a look at the U.S., the other major country, if not at the top of the list, Peter Ford, you know, it's really interesting how they come about and make their case when it comes to, first of all, there's not a genocide that's taking place. This is what the U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin has said. He has also said that and acknowledged that 25,000 women and children have been killed in this genocide. He didn't call it a genocide, of course. And then you have Israel also, probably around 100 or maybe even more at this point, of what's called these licenses, where it doesn't hit the threshold or it doesn't hit that maximum dollar amount that's required for an announcement. And it is said about 100 of those have been at this point executed, with arms being sent to Israel, which a lot of it has to is consisted of bombs. Do you think the U.S. is trying to deceive its arms deliveries to the Israeli regime by doing that, in terms of not getting to that dollar amount?
Well, the American and British governments pay lip service only to international law. They insist that other countries follow international law, but as far as they're concerned, it does not apply to themselves or to their puppet Israel. This is the basic truth of the matter. And they employ scores of lawyers who provide them with legal excuses to continue flouting international law. And sadly, the world is a jungle. Nobody is going to force a country to apply international law, except the main villains themselves, the US and the UK, attempt sometimes to force other countries to respect international law. But there is nobody, certainly not the International Court of Justice, or the ICC, the International Criminal Court, which has the power to bring these two accomplices in crime to book. That is the sad fact. And so the British take refuge behind the excuse that the assessment that they carried out of whether Israel was committing war crimes predated the judgment, the interim judgment by the ICJ. And we will all have to wait until the next assessment, which may be some months down the track, before it becomes clear what the British position is. It's a farce.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
When you take a look at the way international conventions and laws have been broken, maybe it's quite unprecedented, Mick Napier, if you take a look at what has happened when it comes to this genocidal war. And in particular, one day, April 1st, actually, where Israel broke two international conventions three times in one day. It started out with the Al-Shifa genocide, where the revelations came out about hundreds of bodies being discovered. It was 400 and plus that were reported. And then it came that attack, a terrorist act that Iran called on its consular building in Syria. And then you had the aid workers that were also killed, all in one day. Isn't that a mockery of just any type of law that Israel is making, is breaking all norms when it comes to that?
Yes, and I share Peter Ford's analysis that this is a mockery. I mean, this has been a long time coming. Israel has never felt bound by any notion of international law whatsoever. It considers itself to be exceptional. I mean, one notable example reported of the Israeli cabinet is that when Israel invaded an Arab capital in 1982, Lebanon, in Beirut, when a UN delegation visited the city and began to talk about the need for Israel to withdraw, it's reported by members in the Israeli media that there was a touch of humor involved when Israel shelled the center of the city at precisely 2:42 and 3:38 in the afternoon, and killed a large number of people with their shells, of course, in order to underline contempt for the United Nations. This was widely understood in Israel. So Israel, for a very long time, has responded to appeals to follow international law by such murderous response and such contempt. Look, there's only one country so far which has been found guilty of terrorism by an international court. And it's no surprise that Nicaragua today is in the middle of a case against Germany for complicity in the genocide. Because Nicaragua took America to, I think it was the ICC, and was supported in a charge against America being guilty of terrorism by mining their harbors, by funding the Contras, by killing literacy workers, teachers, hospital workers, and so on. But a fat lot of good it did them. America simply ignored that finding. Israel again in 2004 was found guilty by the ICJ, and a ruling was given that they had to take down the separation wall, the so-called apartheid wall, which they were building across the whole apartheid. What happened? All the states that were affiliated to the court refused to take any sanctions against Israel, increased their arms sales, and that was why precisely a year to the day in 2005, the Palestinian Civil Society launched an appeal for boycott, divestment, and sanctions to say we have been let down. We've gone to international courts, okay, but no appeal to morality to these governments has any effect. So we need to try something else. So America, Britain, Israel, they always completely disobey international law when it suits them.
Well, maybe that's one of the things that is the basis for the resistance groups in the region, Peter Ford, in particular the Islamic resistance of Iraq, for example, as an example, not to mention Yemen, who are, in a sense, taking matters in their own hands when international rule-based order, so to speak, has failed. And they just want this genocidal war to stop. But yet, since it hasn't, they're targeting the occupied Palestine in terms of the Israeli regime. What do you make of the fact that we're looking at this attack, terrorist act that Iran has called it, on Iran's consular building in Syria? Do you see that, Peter Ford, as a sign where the Israeli regime has failed and has been defeated on the ground in the Gaza Strip and therefore needs to widen the war and picked, I would say, the wrong I guess, country to pick on, and that's Iran.
Well, the attack on the Iranian consulate was a blatant violation of international law, and specifically the Vienna Convention relating to embassies and consulates. I can tell you as a former diplomat that the Vienna Convention is holy writ is sacred for all diplomats all over the world, because at the end of the day, it's their only protection against violence. And the Israelis broke this convention. And then Britain and the United States not only failed to condemn it, but they prevented the Security Council from issuing a statement condemning the blatant attack. As a result, no diplomat anywhere in the world can feel safe anymore. And the two countries that are supposed to be the biggest supporters of the Vienna Convention and other international laws are, in fact, the biggest breakers of these laws. And as a diplomat, I can tell you it's absolutely shocking. But to anyone who knows how the administrations of the UK and the US work hand in glove with Israel, it's not surprising. Israel has been waging a war on Syria for at least 5 years. Hundreds, literally hundreds of bombings have taken place. The recent attack on the Iranian consulate was not the most serious in terms of victims. But Israel gets away with it because it is given protection by the United States and Britain.
Well, we are looking at another day where there were massive and large-scale protests in solidarity with Palestinians that took place, McNapier. But we're looking at this to have taken place more or less in the past 6 months, and not just over in London or other areas in the UK, but worldwide, really. I mean, like Jordan, consecutive days in a row they've been protesting. What type of impact do you think that has had, whether it's on the political scene or otherwise? The thing that comes to my mind is the boycott, of which these types of protests have really given momentum to the boycott movements, which you could probably tell us how that has panned out.
Well, it's a slow burn, but really the images of the last 6 months have burned so deeply into many, many millions of people's minds that it's impossible to go back to the status quo for many people. Today I was on a demonstration in Glasgow that shut down one branch of Barclays Bank, and then they went to a supermarket and briefly closed that down as well. There's an appetite now in the pro-Palestine solidarity movement to escalate. We saw a million people march through London for Palestine recently. Unprecedented numbers. We've never seen anything like that before. And because the genocide is continuing and people feel particularly impotent and unable to stop it, there is an appetite to escalate. And we saw activists close down the third Israeli arms factory in Britain by Elbit a few weeks ago, and activists are inspired by this and beginning to think that this kind of direct action and mass mobilization together is the only thing that can make a difference. Look, when the word genocide comes into the frame, all etiquette, all protocol is off. I remember during the Rwanda massacre, the Rwanda genocide, of course, the UN general in charge, a man called, I think it was called Romeo Dallaire, because America absolutely refused to use the word genocide because they knew what it entailed, he was absolutely distraught. And later, for a few years, he became an alcoholic, absolutely devastated. But America was determined during that genocide not to allow the word genocide to be used. And it's exactly the same thing with Gaza today. We are facing the reality that the phrase that's trotted by off the lips of Western diplomats, the rules-based international order, millions, hundreds of millions of people now realize there is no rules-based international order. There is no international law, and the only way to protect life and to avoid the atrocious suffering is through resistance. Resistance of all kinds against the perpetual war machine that we now see at work in Gaza, forcing a situation of disease and starvation, unspeakable atrocities. And these unspeakable atrocities are an acid eating away at the status quo, and millions of people determined that they cannot continue with the status quo. So I think the having been involved in BDS for a very long time, it doesn't go up gradually. It goes up through a particular massacre. It goes up by step. And I fully anticipate this step to be far and away the greatest step that the boycott and divestment movement is going to take.
All right. You know, when it comes to that, back to that attack on Iran's consular building, Peter Ford, if there is going to be any type of military engagement with Iran, which Iran has promised that there's going to be a counter attack, how do you think Israel's going to be able to handle that if we were looking at other groups, resistance groups in the region to also engage Israel militarily? Because we know with Hezbollah, they're engaged on that front. We know that the Islamic Resistance of Iraq, for example, is targeting Israel quite a bit. It's upped the number of attacks in the past 2 weeks especially. I mean, can Israel actually be stretched on so many fronts?
Well, Israel has started a process now which may go beyond what they expected by breaking a taboo, by crossing a red line with the bombing of a diplomatic office. They may have bitten off more than they can chew. Israel is not able, I believe, to sustain a war on two fronts for more than a few days. And if they, in the end, provoke Iran to the extent that a new front is opened up, Israel will suffer very badly. They will not be able to proceed with their plans in Gaza, for one thing. Already, without Iran lifting a finger, we see that the Israelis are panicking. They've already withdrawn a lot of their troops from Gaza. They have put the country on alert. Economic activity in Israel has come to a standstill. Israel is a small country with not a very large population. They are not able to sustain this level of activity, military activity, for very long. And this is before Iran has even lifted a finger. Israel is already paying a heavy price for what they did in Damascus.
Thank you, Mick Napier, Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Peter Ford, thank you so much, former British ambassador to Syria.
Welcome.
With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tagway and the team, it's goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering the doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani is the guest speaker for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Sheikh Rouhani, for today's discussion, I want to ask you about the concept of zulm or oppression and also cruelty. So, some people might think that those who do oppression, I mean the oppressors and the cruel ones, and those who are, we can say, that's right, act upon atrocity in today's world, they will have a better life. They will be healthier because they can amass wealth, they can violate the rights of this person and that person. And it is so that always oppression and cruelty, has better fruits in the lives of such people. Is it so?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I don't think so, because oppression or zulm is a kind of action that is wrong, that is bad, that is evil. Based on Islamic anthropology, we know that in human being there are different souls. One is nafs al-lawwama.
Yes.
Nafs al-lawwama is like a judge within us or inside us that is always aware of our actions and our deeds. This nafs is a very just and fair judge.
Yes.
It always judges us, and it always warns us that, oh man, you are doing wrong things, you are doing evil things, be mindful, it will have its consequences for you. That is why you see that it many times happens that some criminals, mm-hmm. after a while, after some years, they themselves refer to the judge that I was criminal at that time and I deceived you. Due to the deception I made, you mistakenly for example, punished an innocent person instead of me. Yes. Please free that person, and I am the one who should be punished. If you look at, for example, the newspapers, you'll see lots of cases that happen that criminals